From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, in search of the great creator with astronomer and astrobiologist David Darling. Fascinating program. Well, I did something today. I bought four friends, four World Series tickets, so they could see the St. Louis Cardinals play the Detroit Tigers tonight. But it rained in St. Louis, and it rained, and it rained, and it never stopped. And even though they were all out there in the rain at the stadium, the new Busch Stadium, the game finally got postponed. It never started. It was just too cold, it was too wet, and the rains just never gave up. It's still raining outside, as a matter of fact. So my four friends shall go to the game again on Friday, where that postponed game will be. The St. Louis Cardinals are one game up, 2-1 over the Detroit Tigers in the World Series. While we're in St. Louis, though, celebrity opponents of embryonic stem cell research, including the starting pitcher in tonight's World Series game, started airing ads in response to a controversial television ad campaign in which actor Michael J. Fox graphically displays the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. The 30-second Fox ads, in which he asks voters to support various Democratic candidates and legislation backing stem cell research, ignited a firestorm when talk show commentator Rush Limbaugh told his audience that the television and movie star was either off his medication or acting. In one of the ads, Fox was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 1991 and went public with the disease in 1998, asks Missouri voters to support Democratic Senate hopeful Claire McCaskill, who is campaigning to unseat Republican incumbent Jim Talent. McCaskill supports Amendment 2, which is a Missouri ballot initiative which would constitutionally protect stem cell research in the state. Jim Talent opposes the amendment. It's a big story here in the Missouri area, and celebrities are jumping on board with their own particular views on this issue. So much so, we're going to talk about stem cell research in just a moment with Charles Ostman, so get ready for that. Angry villagers in Nigeria stormed and seized three Shell oil platforms in the volatile Niger Delta, forcing oil production to be shut down at each one. Royal Dutch Shell officials have declined to say how much oil had been cut off after the platforms were attacked. Chevron Corporation said it shut down a platform in the area simply as a precaution. In Brazil, horrible story. A man accused of being Brazil's most prolific serial killer was sentenced to more than 20 years in prison in the first of 42 possible trials for the slaying and mutilation of young boys. Francisco Deschagas Rodriguez de Brito. He's a 41-year-old. He's a bicycle mechanic. He was given only 19 years for homicide and 1 year and 8 months for hiding the body of the 15-year-old victim. Chagas now faces trial for 41 other homicides between 1991 and 2003 in his area and the neighboring Amazon state of Pará. The prosecutors say several victims were mutilated. No date has been set for the trials. Unbelievable. China has given its first full public account now of its mission to North Korea. Remember when it sent an emissary there to kind of talk with the president of North Korea to try to get him to stop with all these nuke testing? Well, China says it got no apology from the top leader, Kim Jong-il, for the atomic explosion, but did receive assurances from him that there were no plans for a second nuclear test. The North's reclusive leader also expressed a willingness to return to six-nation talks over its nuclear program if financial restrictions levied by the United States are first resolved. In Denver, authorities say that they have broken up a methamphetamine ring that shipped the drug in toys, including an Elmo doll. Agents said 19 people in custody, including the alleged leader of the Northern Colorado drug ring, and that they seized more than 45 pounds of what they described as high-quality methamphetamine. Well, in a moment, we're going to bring in Charles Ostman. We're going to talk about stem cell research. This issue is getting hotter and hotter. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to keep Charles Ostman for the entire hour with your phone calls at the half here. Charles Ostman is currently the senior fellow at the Institute for Global Futures, a consulting group which provides strategic research, analysis, technical due diligence, and related technology development services to Fortune 500 companies. He has authored numerous technical papers, published articles, lectures frequently around the country talking about cyber life secrets and a number of other science-type projects. He's our guest on Coast to Coast. Charles, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Very much alive and well, and glad to be on there, although it is a rather touchy subject, but I'm happy to address it.
It really is, Charles. This episode, I'm in St. Louis for a little bit, and this issue really started heating up a few days ago when Michael J. Fox campaigned on television for one of the candidates here running for the Senate. And now a number of other people are beginning to jump on board on this issue. But give us, if you would, because there's a lot of people who just don't seem to understand yet just what stem cells are. Give us your definition.
Sure. And it's a very brief thumbnail. In fact, it is a complex topic, but I'll make it as simple as possible.
Please.
To start with, essentially all cells emanate from a common cell type. That sounds a little odd, but what happens is when the cells are first created, they're like a generic container, you might say, for a group of organelles, which have yet to be defined in terms of their specific identity, in terms of a type or function. But then very soon, this initial cell type is called a zygote, but then as soon as other proteomic interactions begin to act with the other parts of the tissue system or other parts of the organism in question, then it becomes more defined and it begins to become more specialized. And the cells will differentiate into, say, pancreas or neural tissue or skin cells or whatever it might happen to be. The big deal here is that by capturing these zygotes in their most primordial stage and then knowing what kind of proteomic messages to essentially trigger the cells with, we can now, on command, instigate these cells to become any kind of cell we would wish. So as one can imagine, if you're talking about Parkinson's, or any of the other neurological disorders, spinal bifida comes to mind, things of that nature, or things like diabetes, where pancreas tissue, of course, is the thing in question, or liver tissue for any number of ailments, any variety. I mean, it's like a Pandora's box. Once this potential has become a defined procedure, the range of medical difficulties that can be addressed is almost endless. I mean, it really is a sort of a spectacular breakthrough.
Let's use the case, Charles, of a damaged liver.
Sure.
We've only got one. And if you lose it, you're a goner.
Oh, yeah.
You might be able to get a transplant, but, the list is very long.
The list is very long, and here's what I'd like to say, and I'm forgive for stepping into it quickly, but
sure.
There's a lot of controversy about organs coming in from other parts of the world, like China, for instance.
Yes.
And this is a very dark industry. I mean, if you want to talk about ethics or the lack thereof, this is something I really have strong feelings about. So as a alternative, wouldn't it make more sense? I simply posed the theoretical question. Wouldn't it make more sense to, instead of facilitating this sort of dark, kind of quasi-organized crime sort of aspect of this whole organ trade, why not start looking into other alternatives where you could simply grow the tissue as needed? I think this would be, in the long run, a much better direction to go. That's my personal opinion.
Would you be able to grow the liver within the person's body? In that, would you inject stem cells straight into his damaged liver?
Let
it work that way?
I understand. I understand what you're asking. And there's a variety of different approaches. And again, it's a little bit complicated, but it's like a hydra. You have several different branches or different directions to go in. And one direction that's kind of interesting is something called scaffolding, where you can create a kind of a three-dimensional structure, kind of like a sponge, as a rough description. But then you can, into that structure, you can grow the cells that are pre-cultured. And there's a lot of different areas, bone research in one area. Certainly liver tissue is, in fact, one that's being looked into, where instead of having to grow the entire liver, you can sort of like grow a volumetric patch, if you will. Because quite often people that have damaged organs, it's not the whole organ that's gone. It may be a portion of the organ. And the theory is if you can replace a portion or sort of install in increments these sort of patches, it's an entirely different process than simply yanking out the organ and sticking an entirely new organ. Now, I don't know of any research, at least today, where they're growing an entire kidney or an entire liver or something like that, in addition and putting it inside the person.
Right.
But certainly the ability to culture the cells and then prepare the cells in some kind of way that's specific to the tissue in question, that very much is where things are going.
Now, the controversy, of course, is where you get the stem cells. And lately, everyone's talking about embryos. Yet, I've talked to some medical practitioners who say you can also get it from umbilical cords and other kinds of fluid. Why, then, is there such a massive controversy over the embryos when we would easily be able to obtain what we need from these other areas?
The controversy stems from the fact that, sorry for the pun.
Stems, exactly.
It was a complete accident, I swear. But the controversy is that from the embryonic source, you have a much wider variety of potential cell types you can derive. When you branch into the umbilical cord or some of these other fluids, you have a more limited range. You still have potential cell types, but you have a much broader spectrum of cells that you can get from the embryo itself. But here's the question I'd like to pose, and I know this will get some folks to call in or send in probably some frothy emails or something like this, but I'd like to suggest to the audience that if we're stepping into a world where theocracy and politics gets mingled into scientific policy, in my mind, this is a really, really dangerous area. And I know I'm kind of stepping off on a limb here, but use the metaphor of this moment, if you will, to think about maybe other areas, maybe it'd be medical science, maybe it'd be other areas of science that aren't even medical, could be other areas entirely. But if we begin to step into the precedent of establishing this kind of a mechanism by which to evaluate what is appropriate, what's proper, or what the majority of the population would wish to have through some kind of legal, decree or something, in my mind, this is a really dangerous area to be going in. So it kind of goes beyond just the sort of momentary snapshot of some TV ads or, Rush Limbaugh going a little crazy about this topic or something like this. To me, it's a much broader issue, and I think this is really the reason it's become such a topic for discussion.
Okay, now let's talk about in vitro fertilization for a moment. Okay. Where aren't some embryos cast aside in vitro fertilization, where they maybe take the best fertilized egg and implant it back into a woman, and then what happens to those other embryos?
They're tossed. That's exactly right. This is what makes it so frustrating, because I say this with extreme care. I mean, I'm very respectful of the audience, and I'm very respectful of anyone who's perhaps evaluating this in their own mind. But this is a complex issue, and I think that for somewhat political reasons, different sides of the fence have tried to portray this in certain ways to make it sound drastic or as if we're going to be killing babies to get cells or something. That's completely not the way it is at all. The vast majority of these in vitro fertilization attempts don't work. And so what you do have, in fact, is a kind of a surplus of these zygotes that, in fact, could be deployed this way.
Yet these opponents of stem cell research and the use of embryos do not say anything against in vitro fertilization for families to try to have children. So why is that?
The hypocrisy goes beyond that, because I'm quite aware, and you are as well, because you have a site on your website to help kids in other parts of the world who are suffering from any variety of difficulties, including a lot of diseases. And believe me, I've traveled myself and I've seen some of this, and when you see it, it really reaches into your heart and says, this is not right. And so my first thought would be, why should we be preventing diseases or access to cures or at least treatments for these diseases, which could be accessible within range of today's technology, in lieu of yet to be born, almost a clump of cells, if you will. In other words, we're living in the 21st century, and yet there are some out there who kind of want to see the world in a kind of a 15th century religious law kind of framework. And that sounds a little harsh, but I mean, that's the reality what we're trying to face. We're trying to deal with how do you come to a practical, reasonable, and morally correct way of looking at a range of options versus edicts or certain religious decrees that really date back from a very different time.
I mean, it is frustrating. I'm sure when we open up the phone lines, Charles, we're going to get all kinds of calls, con for us.
I know this already, but I was willing to go on the air because I think this is a very crucial moment, and the sooner we can get a good public debate going, and believe me, it's in ignorance where bad decisions get made. So it's good that it's being talked about and being discussed. That's the whole point.
If we don't do this, will other countries move ahead of us?
They are already, and that is really the crux of the matter. And just to put it in very plain language, if you or myself or anyone who's listening, God forbid, their son or daughter, maybe a wife or a husband, whatever, had some awful disease and they knew they could fly to Taiwan or Australia or Singapore or maybe go to a Caribbean island clinic, they get on a plane and they fly out there. And in fact, the only people who could not afford to it would be those who were less economically able to do so. So in a way, you'd be discriminating against the majority of people who probably couldn't afford to fly off to these places, because that's exactly what's happening. The research labs around the world, they are pushing for this, and they're going to get it.
What could go wrong with stem cell research? I mean, could they create monsters? Could something crazy happen in a laboratory?
Not really. I mean, it's not like you have Dr. Moreau's Island where you're creating, you know, weird hybrid animals or something. It's really actually, it's actually surprisingly straightforward. And I could, you know, at least from the people I've ever talked to, and certainly amongst the academics and professionals that I've known over the years, virtually anyone who's ever been involved with this, their whole motivation is cure for disease, you know, improvement of quality of life, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in the darkest of all possible circumstances, could somebody in some distant land, just for the sake of doing so, do something bizarre? I don't know. But it's a very tiny percentage of possibility. And considering the benefits, I think it's a red herring. I think it's a false, misleading way to look at this.
Well, and if somebody's going to do something strange and bizarre, they're going to do it anyway.
They're going to do it anyway. And in fact, if you want to create something horrible, there's much easier ways to get to the... I mean, if you want to create a bioweapon or something ridiculous, there are much different paths to get to that point. You would not be using stem cells to get to that kind of endpoint.
Well, again, I come back to the argument that if people are opposed to stem cell research, then they should also be opposed to in vitro fertilization, and they aren't saying anything about it. They're inconsistent.
Yes, that's right.
Is it possibly because they're not even aware of it? They don't think that in vitro fertilization basically is creating other embryos that are cast away?
George, your point's 100% correct, and I think this is the crux of the matter, that you have a lot of people who, and I say this again with great care, but they get kind of emotionally, they hear a certain collection of terms and they go, oh my gosh, and they have a vision in their mind as to what they think it might be. Whereas that's simply, the reality is just as you say it to be. It's already a process that's occurring. There's already millions of zygotes being produced. And the point is, can we use these things in some better way than simply throwing them out? And the answer would be yes. And I guess in the worst of all possible visions, some people are thinking, well, maybe there might someday be like factories where they just produce zygotes, you know, in huge quantities. You know, I mean, one could sort of extrapolate different visions. But again, to look at this in a more practical sense, we are living in a 21st century world. And whether or not the particular administrative forces that be in this country determined to, in some way, prevent this from happening or put some kind of regulatory block in front of it, it's absolutely going to be happening around the world. There's no question about it.
Briefly, Charles, give us a stage example on leading up to the embryonic stage here, how they create the stem cell then through an embryo.
Well, I mean, they simply divide off, they take off the zygote, and then once the zygote cells are isolated, depends on which type of chemical trigger or messenger you want to send to that cell. But once you get the right appropriate messenger, chemical messenger, to communicate to the cell proteomically, that it wants to become a nerve cell or a bone cell, whatever it might be, it simply happens. I mean, it's actually a very straightforward process. It's the chemistry and so forth is complex, but the actual procedure is surprisingly straightforward. That's what makes it so interesting, because it's a really dramatic change into the entire enterprise of being able to replace or modify or in some way enhance otherwise alien tissue. I mean, there's nothing else that comes even close to having this level of direct path between start point and having something that can be applied.
If 100% was the limit of stem cells in existence, functioning properly, doing what they need to do, where are we at now on that scale? If 100% is, we're there, doing it, and it's perfect. Where are we?
Well, actually, this is where it gets more complex, because it depends upon which particular type of cell and which particular kind of disease or medical conditions being sought after, and a lot of this is actually kept under wraps because of patents and that kind of thing. So there's no exact one answer, but I would say that there's certain areas. I think pancreas is a big issue, because that clearly would go towards diabetes. Neural tissue is the other one, of course, for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is what's being talked about on television right now. But when you think of all the different neurological disorders that happen today, the majority of them could probably be treated with this kind of a treatment.
You mean right now?
Yeah, well, not today, but certainly I would say within a handful of years, easily. That's the direction it's going. That's where the funding or the interest is, and that's where I think the nearest target's going to be.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. This is a very controversial topic. We've got Charles Ostman. He's going to stay with us for the rest of this hour. I'm going to open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to ask Charles a question or just sound off about this as well. We're not picking sides here. We're passing on information. I want to get your views. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. In just a moment, we're going to take your phone calls with our special guest, Charles Ostman, as we talk about stem cell research and get your views and opinions on that. We have found an old Father Malachi Martin CD, an interview conducted by Art Bell a long time ago. This goes hand in hand with the one that we gave out for free a couple years ago with an After Dark subscription. So what we're going to do is we're going to give out two CDs, the original one from a couple years ago. Some of you may have it, some of you don't, but also this brand new one that we have found down in the vault, and you're going to love it. So two CDs, absolutely free. You just pay a nominal shipping and handling fee, and we give them to you when you become a subscriber with the After Dark newsletter. The editors of After Dark are so excited about this. They said, George, what can we do? And I said, all right, let me run with it. And already hundreds of people are jumping on board with this. So if you've been thinking about getting After Dark, well, now's the time to get these two incredible interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin on possession, demons, and all kinds of things. Call 1-888-727-5505, or you can go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. A rainy, cold night in St. Louis in the cave. Let's go to the phones with our guest, Charles Ostman. Well, Charles, hey, right before we go to the phones,
sure.
this issue, when did you begin to really start studying it? What perked your interest?
Well, actually, oddly enough, it comes out of, strangely, astrobiology. I'm not kidding at all. And actually, it comes out of, personally for me, it comes out of nanomaterials from biological sources. And going back several years when I've been on the program previously, I kept talking about the idea that probably the first real layer of nanotechnology applied in a practical sense would come out of the biological sector. That is, sort of, in a sense, disassembling and understanding more carefully exactly how different components within a cell can manufacture very specialized materials or perform assembly tasks at a molecular scale. And because of that kind of research, that really kind of was in parallel and very much in sync with the whole aspect of stem cells, because in a stem cell, you are, in a sense, determining what kind of a cell you're about to create and therefore determining what it's going to assemble or be able to manufacture, if you will, by these kinds of early proteomic messengers. So, I mean, these terms all, or these areas all sort of link together. And then one of my longtime sort of comrades, a guy by the name of Jonathan Trent, a very brilliant fellow who's an astrobiologist at NASA, he's been researching nanomaterials created from biological sources because of his research into unusual organisms. They all sort of weave together. But going back 4 or 5 years, when I first started finding out about this whole concept of stem cells, it was just another extension, really, of this larger arena of how to manipulate biological systems to create materials.
Okay, to the phones we go. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
John in rainy St. Louis.
It is rainy. It is cold, John.
I'd like to thank you, George and Charles, for presenting this forum for a rational discussion of such an important issue. And I just like to make the comment that we know for the last 6,000 years under religious history of that's been dominated by religious judgments. And for me, it's time to evolve. It's time for the human race to evolve to a place where we choose. Where we choose to pick what works over what doesn't work.
And I would agree, and to even take it a bit further, I don't think that the original thinkers who took the spiritual message that they received and then tried to craft a kind of a human-constructed series of books surrounding those core thoughts, I don't think they ever envisioned this particular realm and seeing what's happening now as the mechanism by which they determined those religious laws back in those times. And so that's what gets me so concern that we're applying these ancient, very limited kind of viewpoints to a much different kind of world. And I thank you for having said that.
Thank you.
All right, John, thanks. Appreciate you being on the program. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from San Diego, California. My name is Priscilla.
Hi, Micheline. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, my question for Mr. Austin is, aside from the diseases that you've already mentioned, such as diabetes, et cetera, what kind of promises does stem cell research hold for possibly curing cystic fibrosis?
I don't have a particular knowledge of that disease, and so I don't want, I'm not a medical doctor, by the way. My background is material science, but certainly in all the other diseases that I've seen examples of, there are clearly very specific pathways to get to the ability to replace damaged cells. And this even extends into things like bone marrow, treatment of the immune system, a variety of cancers, I think, are being looked at this as we speak. So I could have guessed or at least assumed that there's probably an equal or parallel path in that area. I just don't have any specific knowledge of it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, Micheline, I appreciate you being part of the program as well. Do you find, Charles, that science is going to team up and push this issue? If you talk to 10 doctors, 10 of them favor this, or there's any opposed to this stem cell research?
I think the vast majority are very strongly in favor. Now, here in California, by the way, we actually passed a bond issue to help kind of accelerate this for a number of reasons. Number one, we're trying to reinvent the economy here in California. We had a horrendous debt, as you probably know. We're like a miniature of the country, as it were. So we've had several different areas of industry that we're trying to sort of resurrect as the new economic frontier. And stem cell research, because of the extremely diverse range of pharmacopoeia and medical things that can become from it, then, you know, there's a big reason to do this. But for all the people I've ever talked to, anyone in the scientific community, I think almost ubiquitously, they tend to see that, okay, we've got to go this direction because at least there is some promise here. And to not look at this or to simply pretend it doesn't exist would not only be a terrible disservice to the people who are suffering from these ailments now, but it simply means it's going to be done somewhere else. And I mean, there's really no way. It's not like you have this one single point source and you're going to put a cap in the bottle and it stops. It's just, it simply isn't like that. So, I mean, in a very practical way, yes, I think just about everyone I've ever talked to is very much in favor of this.
Is this going to be a 2008 presidential issue?
I think it could be, and I think it should be in the following context. And again, I just kind of want to revert back to what I said at the beginning of the program. It's not so much even about this one particular issue, although it's a very important issue. To me, the larger picture is that this is a very good threshold by which to test the concept of, should science be regulated on the merits of the science, or should science be regulated on the merits of quasi-theological or philosophical concepts? I mean, this is a very, very important issue because it's stem cells today. It could be something very much different tomorrow, but we want to set the precedent now while we can.
Okay, let's go to our west of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Good morning.
Hey, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I just had a question for your guest
on sure.
The issue of neurological and, like, you know, someone has, you know, paralysis from, say, you know, a broken neck or something like that. How would stem cells, how would doctors or surgeons actually go about installing new stem cells into, say, brain tissue? Would that entail, like, you know, brain surgery, where you actually go in and install it that way, or actually going into the spine? I was just curious about,
sure,
I guess, for want of a better word, the installation of the brain cells.
No, that's a perfectly valid question. That's a very good question. And so here's the basic concept. What you want to do is you create the cells externally in a culture, and you create enough of the tissue in question so that it becomes of enough volume or enough interconnection, because of neural tissue really relies on interconnection, you know, enough interconnects and enough synaptic endings, that kind of thing, to actually match the area of tissue we are hoping to repair or replace. And in fact, it's interesting you mention this, because this exact kind of thing, spinal damage, sensory damage, or in some cases certain areas of the brain that may have suffered trauma, this is exactly where it could be remarkably useful. Now, right now, I mean, the push of this moment has been to create devices, actual chips, physical chips, little silicon chips, as it were, that have biologically friendly coatings and other chemistries applied so that they can become sort of like interfaces, if you will, to neurological tissue. But the end result, the ultimate goal, would be to actually just simply replace the tissue with real tissue. So we're kind of doing that now as a sort of a stopgap measure to the ultimate, which I think would be to simply replace the damaged neurons with new neurons, and that would be the way to go.
Oh, very interesting. Well, thank you very much for your answer.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. It's your turn. Hi there. Hello. Nope. I hear you in the background, but we're going to have to let you go. We'll go to our next wild card line. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Jared Kahn from Mankato, Minnesota.
Hi, Jared.
I have a couple ends to my question. Who is really out? Who's going to benefit the most from stem cell research financially? And my other part of the question is, do the, some of these pharmaceutical companies that are out there right now, are they going to lose out because of the long-time treatment that some of these chronic diseases?
Well, that's a very interesting question. In fact, that's a particularly interesting question. And in fact, the last time I was on the program, we sort of had a somewhat like similar kind of brush along this topic. As I said before, there is kind of a, I'll use this word delicately, maybe a shifting of the guards or a shifting of the epicenter of power, in the sense that you are right. In the current scheme of things, it's a very small number of very large corporate entities that kind of control the majority of pharmacopoeia as it expands into the global marketplace. And the traditional models of working up a chemistry that can solve a certain kind of problem or regulate some kind of condition in some cell types, and then after 10, 12 years of development, human trials, et cetera, then you put the drug out in the market, the cost curve for putting those drugs into the market is huge. We're talking anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion or more to get a chemistry into the marketplace. So you have to have an enormous amount of volume to justify that kind of cost. Now, all of a sudden, if you can start inserting cells that simply replace, you know, some aspect of that kind of pharmacological remedy, yeah, clearly you're changing a very different kind of economic model. So it's hard to say exactly where this is going to go as a kind of a policy directive. But again, I think the, as I see it to be at least, I see this as being a global phenomena. We're no longer living in a situation where a couple of countries sort of control the world's or the majority of the world's market share. Now you have relatively small countries and mid-sized countries. And, I mean, certainly China is very aggressive in this area, and Japan is moving along, India is moving along, Australia has a pretty prolific area of research. In other words, lots of countries are going to start popping up with their own particular programs, some public, some private. A lot of them are combinations of both. So you're going to have a much wider variety of competitive sources coming up with different remedies to solve these kinds of medical problems. And in my mind, that's a good thing. The more competition, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So in a sense, I think this is one pathway amongst many to change the current nature of how such a small number of large entities control the dispensation of medical solutions in terms of drugs to a broader range of solutions.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your
I hope that answered the question. I tried to. I hope I tried to answer the question anyway.
I think so. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, good morning. It's Russ here in Toronto. It's quite brisk here, but we're doing fine. And hello, George, and hi, Charles, if I may.
Hey, Russ.
In an article titled Induced De-Differentiation in a journal, Neurorehabilitation, Volume 17, 2002, Dr. Robert O. Becker, author of Body Electric, the cross-currents text that he had, twice nominated for the Nobel Prize in Medicine, suggests he can create a differentiated cell by inducing de-differentiation of any body cell through purely bioelectric magnetic means. And I've spoken with him a couple of times in the last couple of years in Lowville, New York. He's over 80 right now, and the last time I reached his wife, he was rather ill. He's furious at the medical establishment. He's furious at government for not listening to what, in fact, he shows as evidence of a wholly new approach to this subject. I don't think we should be pandering after certain interests to collect and harvest stem cells when you've got this kind of research in your face saying, here's a better way. I think Geldof would sing a different tune if he knew what was going on with Robert O'Becker.
I would offer the following. I don't know this particular gentleman or his research, but I have heard of other sort of parallel areas of interest coming out of Germany, actually, where electrical current was used to stimulate healing of wounds and that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's certainly some plausible concepts there. But this is the general concept I'd like to present to you, just pre-consideration. The more parallel paths of research and more options are available in a broader spectrum of potential interrelatable remedies, the better.
Well, sure, you never know where it's going to come from.
Well, or the combination thereof. In other words, what I'm hoping to suggest is I would be absolutely in favor of seeing the area of research you just mentioned get more attention. Of course I would.
Well,
but I would not want to see
for Robert O. Becker with the staff on a couple of occasions, and it's been hard to reach a number of folks. George can only do so much to get the people he wants on the show, but I really would hope before this man passes away,
we've been trying to get
a comprehension of this journal and what he's been doing for these many decades.
Yeah, we've been trying to get him.
And I would just like to reiterate, I would never want to discourage another parallel path of research. In fact, quite the opposite. I try to encourage as many paths as possible, and without limiting any possibilities as well.
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on with us. Hi there.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Greetings.
Hi.
Hey, George, I met you in Portland, did the book signing, or not the book signing, and in fact, I gave you a book my brother wrote, but to the point, everybody's talking about the stem cell research, and isn't this mainly about federal funding? What happened to the pharmaceutical companies and private funding just doing it on their own? I don't see why we should fund research, and then the pharmaceutical companies or somebody else raising the prices to cover the research that we already funded.
Actually, I do have an answer for that, but it's a good question. I very much understand the philosophy we're trying to get to. When you have a certain amount of the public sector providing their research, the initial sort of very exploratory, from ground zero kind of groundwork to get this stuff going, it provides a different kind of environment than when you have that research specifically and only confined to privately owned laboratories. I mean, I know a lot of these laboratories, and I'm quite aware of how they do things. And this would not be a direction you want to go in, because they would covet the things that they have under laboratories and try to extract as much IP or intellectual property value as they possibly could. Conversely, if you have a lot of this research distributed over a wide variety of publicly funded universities and research laboratories and that sort of thing, there's always going to be a pretty large volume of different kinds of interrelatable research coming out of the public sector, which means you, in fact, have a much wider variety of possible options and much less narrow control in terms of private domination of a particular type of technology. So I'm kind of in favor of public funding, as a general philosophy, and I'll sort of let you digest on that. But anytime you confine any breakthrough region, especially something this large that has so many potentials to it, to only private funding, that to me is a very dangerous direction to go in.
Well, when we talk about oil, all we're doing is letting the oil companies drill. We're not funding other drilling companies to drill for oil.
But the comparison, the comparison is you're not inventing something new. You're just drilling holes in the ground. This is inventing an entirely new and ever-expanding range of different kinds of materials and procedures that come from a specific type of medical source. But the outcome is very varied. That's actually quite the opposite model, if I may, than drilling holes for oil, which is only one commodity.
Well, no, I kind of understand that. I mean, maybe it was a bad analogy, but you're still competition is the realm that you're talking about, and you get more competition by federal funding. But but even if the federal government doesn't fund it, doesn't mean that it's out completely either.
No, but you want to always have the best range of options to work with, and from what I've seen here and in other parts of the world, usually it's a mix of public and private ventures that tends to yield the broadest range of potential results.
Charles, who is leading the pack around this planet with stem cell
research? That's a difficult question to answer because, as the gentleman sort of alluded to, perhaps not intentionally, but he made a good point, because of the fact that a lot of places are now doing it privately because they see some, IP potential there, we don't really have the full answer. However, the one way we can measure this is through the access to public laboratories, which kind of reinforces the statement I was just making. But the point is, there's a lot of universities around the world which are doing this. I mean, Japan is very bent on this. Asia is actually very big. China is certainly going this direction. India is, and certain parts of Europe, Germany, Denmark, elsewhere. But, this is really all over the world. And to say which country is particularly ahead in terms of perhaps the number of breakthroughs or the amount of dollars spent per capita, that could be sort of a debate because it's not really known how much is sort of hidden away and how much is actually in the public sector. But I would say collectively, this is like the next big thing in the biotech industry. So I'm not sure I have an exact answer, but I would say that collectively around the world, this is very much going to be the next sort of major thing in the medical industry as far as this goes.
All right, Charles, thank you so much. This is going to be a hot potato over the next couple of years, isn't it?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me on the air, and certainly welcome anytime in the future.
I appreciate it. Next up, astronomer, astrobiologist David Darling. We're going way out into the universe for this one, looking for the Creator.